Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherDigest.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you back to our eighth, what is our eighth podcast
Ninth.
Now? Ninth podcast?
Ninth.
Geez, so if you're sticking with us here, heading into the season, only 17 days away, I believe.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good run starting to get going here.
All right, Ryan. So obviously last week was the scrimmage that was not at TCF Bank Stadium like we misinformed people on our last podcast, but it was actually at Concordia University Stadium or Field. So let's talk a little bit about that, starting with the offense. And when you talk offense, it's really hard to not talk about Mitch Leidner because that's what everybody wants to talk about.
It is. And I'm going to start a little bit with the Concordia scandal type thing.
Okay.
How the Vikings basically kicked the Gophers off their own field to make sure that they had preparation and time to play, which is ludicrous to me.
Yeah.
So the scrimmage had to be moved to Seafoam Field there. But the stats for Mitch, I mean, obviously not extremely impressive. As you and I were talking a little bit before the year here, he finished 8 of 18, 93 yards and an interception.
Mm-hmm.
If you weren't there and you didn't see it, you'd think, oh, here we go. Leidner again hasn't taken another step forward.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're screwed this season, 6 or 7 wins. But I looked at the stats afterwards, and I saw, you know, I'm getting these from Joe Christensen, excuse me. I didn't feel like he, you know, was that bad at all.
No.
The first series, he went 5 of 6. He had that long pass to Holland, and, you know, I think the Gophers scored a touchdown. And then for the rest of the scrimmage, it was, you know, basically just him throwing it around, and the defensive backs knew what was coming as they'd already ran the same routes 3 different times. And
right.
What did you think? What did you think of Leidner?
So Leidner, to me, actually, we talked about this last week. We want him to be more of a game manager, correct? And I thought that's what he did.
Absolutely.
quite well. When you look at that 8 of 18, it's very misleading. He threw the ball away at least 3 times that I can remember, correct? He definitely had at least 1 or maybe 2 drops. So, you know, those are 5 incompletions right there. But the other thing, like you already alluded to, they were so vanilla in play calls. I recognize at least once or 2 different occasions that they ran the exact same route tree more than once. And it was, to me, it's very frustrating, especially when you're trying to throw the ball, that if you can't catch the defense off guard and they kind of know what's coming, it's incredibly hard to throw it. Like, for instance, when I've watched 7-on-7 football, I'm really actually quite impressed with how those guys can complete so many balls, given that, one, they know something's coming, right? And I don't know how guys even get open sometimes when they can't respect the run.
Absolutely. I mean, let's say, like you said, one of the things I took away was that Leidner did throw the ball away 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
I can count on one hand the number of times in the last 3 years that Leidner's thrown the ball away.
We should say, too, when he threw the ball away on Saturday, that was the right play. Like, he had nobody open, right? That was the play you're going to want him to make to live and play another down.
Exactly. I mean, you were there. There were times when they were doing, you know, 2-minute. There were 3 straight plays I counted, and this is why the interception happened.
Mm-hmm.
Leidner goes back to pass. He stands there for 5 or 6 seconds, and no one's open.
Mm-hmm.
So what does he do? He just rolls out, throws it away.
Mm-hmm.
Next play, the same exact thing happens because none of the receivers are open downfield.
Mm-hmm.
Throws it away. Okay, it's a scrimmage. It's basically a glorified practice with people there. So the third time, you really think Mitch is going to want to throw the ball away for a third time? No.
Right.
So what did he do? I mean, there was a miscommunication between him and KJ where Jalen Myrick fell down.
Yep.
Leidner identified him in the middle of the field, was probably a half second late for those people who want to have something to complain about with Mitch. And he threw it. KJ stumbled to me and went the other way while
mm-hmm.
Myrick was able to recover, and Leidner threw it the other way and it was an easy interception.
Right. It was a broken play, really.
Yes. And so I'm encouraged from what I saw, because I was talking, I don't remember who it was about this, but in most of the scrimmage-type situations, since Leidner's taken over the quarterback position here, you know, the fall scrimmage last year, the spring game the year before,
mm-hmm.
the spring game this year, Leidner hasn't, you know, traditionally played well. And
okay.
it's frustrating to see as I've seen him seven times now this fall camp. In some most, you know, in half these practices, he's done well. And then he gets to these games and or these scrimmages, and it doesn't translate over. And it's frustrating because then, you know, you get people on Twitter and you get people on the message boards on Gopher Digest here. You're like, what are you talking about? He was terrible today. And I'm like, well, I can only report on what I saw at practice that day.
Yeah.
And he was fine. He was, I mean, he was competent. He was, I mean, some days he's even been good.
Yeah.
There has been one or two games, I mean, practices so far. And so I was just encouraged that his performance, while the stats may not say it, I mean, Leidner, if that's the Leidner we saw those first couple of series here before the defense, you know, caught on and the vanilla play calling eventually came around, this team is going to be more than fine. He was more than, you know, he was that game manager role, that, you know, Matt Castle type roles, which I like to keep calling it here, where he's not going to take over a game.
Yep.
I mean, are there going to be games you need him to do that potentially?
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe, you know, TCU or a close game in the fourth quarter. And it's going to come down to his offensive playmakers. But if the lineup we saw the first few series, which was, I don't even know what it was off the top of my head. I think it was about 70% completion percentage. You know, we had that long slant to Holland. I mean, the Gophers will be just fine.
Yep. And you got to remember, too, that when we're going with that game manager, you know, analogy, he didn't have a fumble, which he struggled with last year. He also, for the most part, looked like he was making the right reads. And, you know, it's really hard to tell. It's really hard to tell when you can't look at film, but it looks like he makes the right reads on the zone reads. He had a rushing touchdown, if I remember correctly. So, I mean, he was making plays, and he wasn't necessarily trying to force the issue too much, which I think he did way too often, both his freshman and sophomore year.
He did. So the basis of what Luke and I are trying to get to is, if you weren't there and all you saw was Joe Christensen's recap saying that Leidner was 8 of 18 for, I believe, 93 yards and interception, you're sitting there just rolling your eyes, oh, darn it, another year of Leidner like this. But it wasn't that way. I was actually encouraged because, like I said, in these scrimmage-type situations in the past 2 years, Leidner's gotten to the, whatever it is, the spring game, fall practice, the scrimmage, and he hasn't done well. When he was with the first team offense and they were starting to do things the first few series, as the defense wasn't catching on to them, obviously because of the vanilla play calling and whatnot, he was made the right reads. He threw the ball away, you know, ran the read option as best you can for someone who's not going to be tackled. Am I saying he's going to take this giant step forward? I'm not saying that. I think if he can take it a little step forward, which I think he will once he starts to get comfortable with everything again, the team will be just fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be right around, I mean, I don't want to get into season predictions here. That's a future podcast, but, you know, right around 8 wins again,
right,
which is fine.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk also about, you know, there are more than just he playing quarterback today, and kind of a guy that maybe stood out to a lot of people is Demaree Croft. You know, the true freshman, you know, he garnered some praise from Kill on the radio and in the media. I didn't necessarily think he played incredibly well. I thought he had some struggle. Well, part of it might have been he didn't get a lot of great snaps out of the shotgun, but he additionally, you know, he had a little bit of trouble early with the read option, but eventually, you know, he had a nice drive. He had a rushing touchdown, threw the ball fairly well. You know, like you said the last few podcasts, he has thrown the ball. He has a nicer spiral, a little tighter spin to his ball than Leidner, so that obviously is visually appealing. But, you know, he was good, but I didn't think he was phenomenal like they were saying.
Yeah. I mean, I've been hyping up Demaree most of fall camp here, and I didn't think he played particularly well, as you said. I think that was probably one of his worst days of practice thus far. And like you said, he had his good and his bad. There were throws where he was, you know, inaccurate. As you said, he didn't have phenomenal snaps, and that was a whole other issue. But between him and Matt Leidner, it seemed like half the snaps he was, you know, juggling the ball, trying to make, you know, get control of it and try to run the read option, get his read, and he was flustered a little bit, which is good for the young guy. But, I mean, there's also throws where, you know, he threw the 35-yard touchdown right into the breadbasket for E.J. Sardinia, and it was like,
right.
I can see why, you know, you have all this talent. And I still think he's probably got the most talent of all the quarterbacks on the roster right now, just the most natural talent. he doesn't, I don't know if you could pick up from this, from, you know, the scrimmage type situation, but I mean, he doesn't get flustered easily.
Sure.
For as bad as he played, I didn't see him look, you know, look down one, shaking his head, you know, going back to coach. Oh, woe is me. The centers aren't catching the ball or snapping it, and the receivers aren't catching.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right. What's the next play? I mean, even after he threw the touchdown, all he did was just turn around and go back to quarterback's coach, Jim Zabrowski. What's the next play?
Yeah. You know?
It's a mentality that I'm very encouraged by, and I know that it's been hyped up in the media by Coach Kayla, as I think he's talked about it after each practice, but it's something that is so refreshing to see, especially from a young quarterback, and especially with the natural talent that he has. I mean, Kayla came after Lime Grover came out after practice today, and we're saying, you know, that we've been very impressed by him once again throughout camp, and that we're not ruling out him to be our second quarterback. Well, I'm not opposed to that. I want him to redshirt with every fiber in my body because I think it could use him. You know, it could use him. But say Leidner goes down for, you know, 4 or 5 weeks or more. I don't think you can run out there with Chris Streveler for 4 or 5 weeks and expect to win the ball games, especially after the teams figure out that all you're going to do is run read option for 25 times a game.
Right.
I mean, maybe Jock Parra, but I just, if that situation were to happen, how do you not just, you know, throw him into the fire?
Right.
I just think he is the most natural talent, and while it might not have been on showcase as much and not as consistent as it had been in practices prior, it's there.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's all that matters. He's not overwhelmed. I haven't seen him look overwhelmed from day one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something you can't do. So it's like, I don't think he's going to get too flustered once he gets, if, you know, when he gets thrown into a, you know, if God forbid he gets thrown into a game as a true freshman, I don't think it's going to overwhelm him. And you're going to be looking at him through the camera with wide eyes. Like, oh my gosh, what's happening? It's going to be, all right, I'm your quarterback. Let's go win a ball game.
Right. And I was going to say that the staff too, they've been pretty quick to go out and actually start a true freshman, you know, a la Phillip Nelson. And, you know, they threw him in the fire quite, you know, right in the middle of the season, burned his red shirt to start him against Wisconsin.
Yeah. Max Shortell is a true freshman. Yep. Phillip Nelson is a true freshman. Was Mitch Leidner a true freshman as well?
No, Mitch redshirted.
Okay. But I mean, that's like 3 out of the 4 years that they've played freshman quarterbacks. So
right.
Is there a history of it? Yes. Do I hope it happens?
No.
No, because I want Mitch Leidner to play every game this year, and then
right.
potentially we have something brewing in 2016 with once Demery's here and Tony Poljan. But, I mean, I was encouraged by what Demery, you know, translated over into his first scrimmage in front of, you know, thousands of people instead of just the media guys on the sidelines. So.
Right. He definitely looks the part. He's definitely got the athleticism, like you said. You know, his ball's got a little zip on it. He spins it pretty tight. Like it looks good. I'm excited with his athleticism. Granted, you can't really tell given that they can't tackle him, right? So that kind of a thing, it's a little disappointing that they can't tackle. So you can really see some of that elusiveness and athleticism. But overall, you're right. He looks the part, and it'll be interesting to see going forward.
It will. And, I mean, would you agree that he throws the best ball of the quarterbacks on the roster?
He throws the most effortless ball. He has a little bit of a loopy delivery for me. I think in terms of, you know, an efficient delivery, Jock Parra is kind of all on his own there for me. But, yeah, you're right. It's by far the most effortless. I bet, you know, come next year he throws it deeper than anybody, you know, and it looks effortless.
All right, just making sure I'm not the only one on this podcast who thinks so.
You're not crazy. All right, let's talk about the probably the thing that's most worrisome for me, and you'd been talking about this, but they're getting abused at left tackle with Ben Lauer out now.
They are. And encouraging news came out tonight, you know, Monday night here after practice, that Ben Lauer is going to be able to give it a full go on Tuesday. I can't tell you how much I'm smiling right now, but it is ear to ear because Minnesota needs Ben Lauer like, you know, peanut butter needs jelly. It's, as you said, left tackle on Saturday was not good.
No.
Not good. And it would be this, had been the same things I'd been seeing in practice the days prior with Lauer out. Foster Bush looked, and he was at right tackle. I mean, he looked overwhelmed.
Yeah, he
just looked overwhelmed.
Yeah, he got an earful a couple times, too.
He did. And so with Lauer out, Josh Campion was put to left tackle. Obviously, he started 39 straight games at tackle for Minnesota, so
right.
He knows his way around the position. And, you know, he did – I thought he did well. I mean, he did all right. He did well compared to what I had been seeing going against Hank Akpay, Galen Elmore, and Julian Huff. But there were still too many times on that left side where, you know, Hank or Julian would come off the edge and it'd be 2 seconds and the quarterback, you know, would be sacked. He would have been blindsided. Wouldn't have been good news. So
right.
The good news of all of this is that Ben Lauer is going to give it a full go on Tuesday. And if Ben Lauer is there and Josh Campion's able to slide back to right guard, I feel much better. I will be able to sleep a little bit better at night knowing that Leidner's not going to be skittish after the first drive against TCU because he's been blindsided twice already.
Right.
I mean, Lauer and Perzik have had issues with the speed rush. Obviously, fans know that. It happened last year against TCU. It happened in the bowl game against Shane Ray and the other defensive end who's now in the National Football League. But speed rush is an issue, and that's what Hank Akpay is. I mean,
right.
So, and Julian Huff, but left tackle in the offensive line, to me, that entire day, it just had a tough go of things. What did you think?
Yeah, I did. I agree. I thought that particularly left tackle was definitely a struggle, and I guess maybe that was where I was focusing too often. You know, as we've talked about before, the pass game is so much of a team effort. You know, if things don't go well in all phases, you're not going to be able to complete passes. And I thought that inside, you know, they did better than I remember in the past because they used to get pushed back so far into Mitch's face. I thought they did better at that. But, you know, left tackle was not pretty. Again, I don't think they were allowed to cut, which that's obviously something that would be helpful. But for the most
right.
part, it wasn't pretty. But then again, it is a scrimmage too. Sometimes I wonder how hard they're going in terms of getting after it because they don't want to hurt a guy, or I don't know. Maybe I'm building a house of cards there that's not there. But for the most part, it wasn't terribly pretty. I was a little concerned, especially with left tackle, being that Josh Campion didn't look great. Alex Mays didn't look great. And I don't remember who else was playing left tackle. Also, was it Quinn Oslin maybe?
It was Quinn.
Okay.
It was Quinn, Alex Mays, and Josh Campion. But yeah, as you were saying, it was a little bit frustrating to see. Obviously, I know this. Okay. The front seven of the defense knows every call and check coming in from the sideline because
yeah.
they've heard it for a week and a half straight.
Right.
They know the staff count because again, it's just, you know it by now.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't cut. So if the offensive line, especially the tackles, at a severe disadvantage that way, if the defensive line already knows the snap count, already knows the checks, already knows the calls because they've gone against the same play 20, 30 times already in practice, absolutely.
Yeah.
I understand that. The issue was it just happened too often.
Right.
They were getting beat around the edge way too often, and that was just athleticism. To me, trying to get your kick slide, you know, get your shoulder square to try and take on this defensive end and try to push him behind Leidner and whatnot. It just happened too many times. But as again, with Lauer coming back on Tuesday, very good sign. He was dressed on Saturday for the scrimmage. I watched him go through warmups. He didn't look like he was favoring that knee at all, which is very encouraging to me. And obviously even more encouraging that he's going to be giving it a full go. So that if that means Kippy can slide back to right guard, I feel a lot better about this offensive line. Still a little bit of a concern to me, especially at the tackle with the concerns with the speed rush between Perzig
yeah.
and Lauer. But on the interior, I have no qualms at all. Brian Bobek is the guy we probably should be talking about more.
Yeah.
He's, you know, taking over for Tommy Olsen. And he's done a heck of a job. You haven't heard his name mentioned once this entire fall camp so far. Snaps have been great.
Yep.
There hasn't been a ton of pressure up the middle between him and Christensen, him and Campion, him and Connor Mays. Him and Christensen are, I mean, they're the MVPs in the offensive line so far. They're not talked about, which is what you want from your offensive line. If
right.
I'm talking about you all the time, that's not a good thing. But,
right.
you know, with the offensive line, with Lauer back, I feel more at ease. But we'll see how things – we'll see if Lauer can stay healthy.
Okay, here's maybe, like, I'd like just a one-word answer on this. When I look at the depth at offensive line, should I be concerned? Just even the center, backup center, backup guards, those guys.
I'm not severely, I guess, with if Bobek were to go out for some reason, Christensen would slide over.
Yeah.
Or Tyler Moore, and that would be. I mean, that's fine with me. Guard, you have Joe Bjorklund there, a redshirt senior who's played some the last 2 years. He can fill in at either guard spot.
Yeah, he looked okay, but I'm thinking, like, Isaac Hayes didn't look like he had a great day.
Isaac Hayes did not have a good day at all.
Yeah.
It for a guy who is an upperclassman now and really should be starting to compete, I don't know if the light bulb is going to go on for him. I really hope it does.
Yeah.
I really hope he contributes. He's a local guy from St. Thomas Academy here. I mean, I played against him in high school. And I know how tough he was to go against, but it just doesn't seem like the light's gone on yet. He's a very smart kid, and I hope it happens, but he had a tough day. Yeah, he had a real tough day Saturday. But at tackle, I am concerned.
Yeah.
I am, because Foster, you know, who's a redshirt senior.
Yeah, he really struggled again. Maybe we shouldn't beat a dead horse, but, yeah, he struggled.
Alex Mays, who is finally healthy for the first time, and it seems I believe it's been 2 years since, you know, he signed that he's been completely healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no disservice to him, as he just needs to play.
Right.
I mean, he's been overcompensating for his injuries the last two seasons, and mm-hmm. now he's finally healthy and he's learning how to play again. He just needs reps. Quinn Oslin, who's, you know, probably the most athletic tackle we have, and as a true freshman, he needs reps. He just needs to learn how to go against college defenders.
Right.
So tackle depth on the offensive line is a concern to me, absolutely.
Okay, let's bounce outside the tackles and talk a little bit about tight ends. If you were at the scrimmage, you'd notice they didn't seem to contribute a lot. I think a lot of that had to do with the vanilla play calling. But for the most part, I think that Lingen looks the part. For sure. I mean, he looks so much better than he did last year in terms of just size. I think he looked really fluid and smooth running routes early to warm up. And for the most part, what's the 6'10 guy's name again? I'm blanking on that right now.
Nate Wozniak.
Yeah, he looks a lot better than he has in the past too. And obviously Duke didn't play because he had the surgery, but I'm excited to see him play later in the year.
Yeah, tight end wasn't used. I don't even know if they caught one or two passes on Saturday. It didn't seem like they received any targets, but I think that's just a token of the vanilla play calling and the mm-hmm. quarterbacks trying to put the ball in these receivers' hands and see if they can go make plays in a scrimmage-type setting. The real concern to me is what you talked about in Duke Onyanwu and Lincoln Plezuk being out.
Yeah.
It is concerning to me, as Kill said after the scrimmage that Lincoln, the true senior now, I believe, is – the only one who's questionable for the TCU game at this point, the only one on the team. He's the primary road grading tight end in this Gopher offense. And if he's out, then you're throwing out Nate Wozniak. Yes, he's 6'10", and yes, he's 270 pounds, but he hasn't played a significant snap on offense really to date. And he's going to, you know, take his lumps here in the first few games. And
mm-hmm.
he's the guy I'm concerned about as this Minnesota offense is, you know, 65% run, and it's just I really am a little bit concerned with him out. Obviously, Duke Onyanwu having his I believe it was his right knee scoped again. I believe it's the same knee that he tore last year.
Sure.
And if he's already seeing issues with that, Gil said he's supposed to be back in, you know, 10 to 14 days.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're already having knee issues from an ACL tear a year ago, I understand they're just cleaning things up. Still a little bit concerning to me.
Right, definitely.
Because after Brandon Lingen and Nate Wozniak, it's pretty young.
Yeah. You
have Jerry Gibson, redshirt freshman,
yep.
And then you have Noah Scarver, the Montana transfer He's from Washburn here. Then you have a couple true freshmen, Colton Beebe, Bryce Witham.
Right.
For as much depth as was supposed to be there with early injuries already, it's looking a little bit grim in terms of depth-wise.
Right, definitely. And that's such a vital role for this offense. We've seen in the past, you know, the guys like obviously Max Williams, Drew Goodger, other guys that have had played meaningful minutes for the Gophers in past years.
Right, and Nick Hart's been out. So you have three of your eight tight ends already out with injury, and Nick's been out for about a week. Duke has been out the last few days, and he got surgery. Lincoln's been out since, I think, the third day of practice.
Sure.
So a bunch of these guys are going to be getting reps. I mean, Jerry Gibson's probably your starting H-back. There's nothing wrong with that.
He's just
Again,
young.
He just hasn't played.
Yeah.
Nate Wozniak hasn't really played. Brandon Lingan played as a true freshman.
Yeah.
These guys are – I just want fans to prepare that these guys are going to take some lumps here
right.
in the first few games, and you just have to be prepared for that, as they haven't seen game action yet, and they're going to be forced into because of injury concerns. I think the talent's there. Again, they just have to play.
Right.
But tight end on Saturday wasn't really a focal point. Not too worried about it. Vanilla play calling.
Yeah.
Tough to gain a lot from Saturday just because the tight ends weren't really traditionally thrown to.
Right.
The only pass I remember that was thrown to a tight end was to Nate Wozniak, and Cody Pope jumped a little hitch route there from Strabler and went 30 yards for a touchdown. But other than that, the tight ends weren't really used too much. Not a concern. Depth and injuries right now are a little bit of a concern to me, but we'll see what happens come TCU.
Right. Okay. So obviously we're talking about throwing some young guys into the fire and, you know, playing, you know, tight end or whatever position it'd be, maybe even Demery Croft playing. Let's talk about some of the freshmen that stood out though. Like you've got, obviously to me, Shannon Brooks stood out, right? He looked super good. I had no expectations of what he might look like. And he ran so hard. You know, really a tough physical runner, kind of bounced off guys, really impressed. I don't think he really did him justice, Ryan.
Shannon had himself a heck of a day, huh?
Yeah, he was great.
That kid was, he was one tough SOB.
Yeah.
I will say that. Shannon Brooks coming from Pickens, Georgia, up in the mountains in northern Georgia there. He ran his tail off, man.
Yep.
There were multiple times he'd be getting hit in the backfield or he'd take a hard lick 2 yards in the line of scrimmage there and bounce right up, run through contact. He's not afraid to really play physical.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his playing style, which was on showcase on Saturday, was he's a very physical runner. If he has the choice between, you know, juking you out of your shoes or laying down the shoulder and truck sticking you, he's going to truck stick you.
Yeah.
He's going to let you know about it. And there's nothing wrong with that. This is Big Ten football. You got to play physical.
Right.
But, yeah, Kill said yesterday on Sid and Dave that Shannon's going to play, which is a little – I know he did really very well at the scrimmage here, but you have, you know, I believe Roderick Williams, Rodney Smith, Berkeley Edwards.
Yeah, you've got a
– And Jeff Jones is your fourth running back, and he's a receiver.
Right.
Maybe they need bodies on special teams, but I just have hesitation playing Shannon if he's not going to see significant snaps at running back, which at this point in time, I can count three guys ahead of him, potentially four if Jeff were to move back.
Mm-hmm.
Top 100 recruit as a running back in high school. But Shannon did play well, and I was encouraged to see that. What did you think of your first impression of him?
I thought he ran really hard. I liked it. He looked good in terms of even catching the ball when he was warming up. Looked like he had good hands. I think he could contribute and add meaningful minutes. I'd like to see they either kind of stick Jeff at wide receiver and keep him there because they obviously need some depth there, or commit him to being a running back. I don't know if I love the idea of him, you know, playing that really hybrid position of running back, wide receiver, like they kind of do at Oregon. I don't know. More or less, I was impressed with Shannon Brooks. He stood out of the most of all the freshman running backs outside of Rodney Smith, who really didn't see a ton of carries, but you know, Shannon definitely stood out the most.
Yeah. I was hoping Rodney was going to get a little bit more work on Saturday, but
yeah,
he's obviously with the first team. They didn't need to, they already know what they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
Yeah. Shannon's definitely the farthest along. James Johannesson, he got, you know, a lot of reps. but didn't really do a whole lot with them. And Jonathan Femicola is just, he needs to learn. He needs to learn how to play American football from Canadian high school football. It's going to take some time. The physical tools are there, obviously.
Yep.
But Shannon Brooks had a heck of a day, and Kill says he's going to be a guy that's going to play for us on Saturdays here this fall. So we'll see. I'd be interested to see what his use will be.
Okay, let's transition now to defense, and then we can talk about, you know, those young wide receivers that have done well later. So defensive-wise, obviously the one thing that stood out a lot to me was the lack of depth that they really have on the defensive line right now. And some of that's due to injury, I understand. But, you know, basically after those starters and maybe a couple DNs, you're really kind of thin, right? And that to me was really concerning.
The injury bug has hit the worst on defensive line. You've hit it right on the head. Guys like Robert Nandole, Alex Keith, who are both expected to be in the two deeps come TCU, have been out for an extended period of time now. Julian Kafo went down in the scrimmage. I believe Moses Hall has been out since day one. Mm-hmm. Gary Moore just got back. But guys like Steven Richardson, Scott Ekpe, Hank Ekpe, Galen Elmore, they're getting a ton of reps right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little bit concerned. They may be getting overworked a little bit because of all these reps. That's why you saw a guy like Julian Huff having to play
some
rush defensive end.
Yeah.
Obviously, he did very well at it, but that's not going to be his natural position.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, when you're trying to rest guys like Theron Cochran, Hank Ekpe to an extent, Scott and Steven Richardson, it is a concern. As these young guys, even Winston Bielady-Boudaire,
mm-hmm.
Gary Moore, they're getting a ton of reps as well, which is great for their development, but you also want to keep them fresh
mm-hmm.
and make sure that the rep's a good rep and they just don't get bowled over and pancaked by an offensive lineman because of fatigue. Obviously, Minnesota plays 6, 7, 8 players on the defensive line each game as they rotate a ton, 60, 40 probably. I don't have the exact numbers on how they keep the guys fresh, but they love to do that, and Phelps has come out and said that they like to play 7 or 8 guys on the defensive line. Obviously, the starters are fine.
Mm-hmm.
Hank Ekpe, Theron Cochran, Steven Richardson, Scott Ekpe. Andrew Stelter is your backup defensive tackle.
Yep.
He'll be solid. Galen Elmore, I believe he's batted down a pass now in the last 5 practices/scrimmages I've seen him, which is very encouraging because I don't remember a ton of batted down passes last year. Do you?
Not particularly, come to think of it. But, you know, with his height, that's definitely something that he can take advantage of because he's so tall.
Absolutely. And so now you're looking for the 7th and 8th defensive mm-hmm. linemen. And if Nandole is not there, then you have to throw in Gary Moore.
Right.
Who, when he keeps his pad level down, makes a play. But 85% of the time, his pad level is still too high. He's still learning how to play defensive tackle. And he gets blown back by the ball, or he's just really just clogging a gap. Or you have Julian Kafo at the other defensive end, mm-hmm. who's a redshirt freshman, who went out with an injury. So now you're forced to play Winston Bielady-Boudaire, who is a true freshman, 6'2", 6'2½", 6'3", 230 pounds. You need bodies.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating because they have the bodies there. They're just injured. And I should say that Alex Keith and Robert Nandole, who are expected to be in the 2-deep and play a lot of snaps, as seniors here, their injuries aren't expected to be serious, and they're expected to be back probably sometime this week. But the fact that they've been out for already a week and mm-hmm. the injuries are really unknown to an extent, as Kill hasn't addressed them, it is concerning.
Right. The one thing, too, last year it seemed like they had to play too many freshmen because of injuries or because of depth issues, and that was something that they could kind of resolve this year with guys being a year older and taking some of these redshirts off some of these guys. But depth still seems to be an issue, and hopefully that's something they can address in recruiting these, you know, this cycle or even the next cycle.
Yeah, obviously 2016 defensive line recruiting is a huge focus.
Right.
3 or 4 defensive ends,
mm-hmm.
1 or 2 defensive tackles. It's a huge need, and they know it, and they're doing their best to try to get some depth there. Obviously, with Treylon Weber, the JUCO from Texas, mm-hmm. coming in January, he'll have, I believe, 3 years to play 2.
Sure.
So basically 2 years, because he's going to play.
Yeah.
Absolutely right away, especially with Theron Cochran and Alex Keith graduating. So all you have there for depth is Galen Elmore and Hank Ekpe.
Yep.
So you need guys. So yeah. Traylon will play right away, and then they need to find three more high school defensive ends.
Right.
And that's obviously the big focus here the rest of the 2016 class is finding defensive ends, but depth is an issue right now. I don't anticipate it really biting Minnesota against TCU as Nandole and Alex Heath are expected back, but it is an issue currently, so we have to talk about it.
Okay, when we talk about linebackers now, I want to talk about Cody Pook. Or Cody Polk. I keep saying that incorrectly. Cody Polk, Polk? Cody Polk.
For all the Gopher fans who are looking at his name right now, it's P-O-O-C-K. So it looks like, what did you call it?
Pook. It looks like Pook. Yeah.
It is pronounced Polk. Like you're literally poking your husband or wife right next to you as you're listening to this in the car, and she's rolling her eyes at you. We appreciate your business.
Yeah.
We appreciate you listening to us. But it is Polk. It is Cody Polk.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
So that guy is just absolutely everywhere. And to me, it seems, and you said this already, it seems like it's kind of his job to win. And at this point, he's either missing something or, you know, something's not clicking or he's dropping assignments. But he's absolutely everywhere. He's a physical specimen. This has got to be his job to win.
It is his job to win, but it is also Everett's job to lose, and he's not losing it.
Sure.
The issue with Cody Polk right now, we should mention that on Saturday, I believe one of Cody's first reps, he jumped a hitch route. I believe it was a hitch route from Chris Streveler. Streveler stared him down immediately once he got the snap. Cody was instinctual enough, read the pass, broke on it, 30-yard interception return for a touchdown.
Yep.
Boom. Big playmaker. The issue I'm hearing from some sources here about why Cody hasn't yet passed Everett is consistency and trust. Because obviously he's athletic and he makes plays, but I believe Sherrill's and Clay's aren't willing to trade those huge plays for blowing other assignments. You know, he's coming along, and the goal is for him to be there come TCU. But Everett Williams has done more than adequate. Where Everett may not be as explosive, as tall, as long,
yeah,
and maybe as instinctual, he's always got the call right, and he's not going to blow an assignment. And you know what you're going to get each snap, where Cody, you don't.
Right.
You're either going to get a huge play or you're going to have a huge play on you. And Minnesota's already got one of those types of linebackers on the defense in Devondre Campbell. Now, if you stick two of them out there and they both mess up, that's not good.
Yeah.
Not good for this Clay's defense, which prides itself on not making big plays against them. So Cody, as you said, Cody, I've seen the last seven practices. Making plays. Obviously, I don't have the film, the calls.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the view from the end zone where I can see the plays and as they develop and get to rewatch them and see what Cody missed. All I know is I think, you know, Mr. Polk has more talent than Everett. And most of the time, talent's going to win out.
Mm-hmm.
But for Everett, who played as a true freshman last year and is still starting as a true sophomore at Mike, replacing Damian Williams, he's done a heck of a job. It's just Cody has the traits that are like, you could be playing at the next level one day, and we might want to get your reps.
Right. All right. Let's...
For Cody, he just has to be more consistent.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about secondary. There's not a lot to say here other than, okay, our starting secondary is good. They look really good. You know, arguably probably two of the best, one of the best corner tandems in the country. Again, Demaryius Travis just looks super good. Improved on last year compared to what I had seen. Almost made a pick right in front of the NFL scouts, but it would have been a really tough play. Had he made it, I think even they would have gotten excited. I like our starting secondary. Where I really start to get squeamish, and we talked about this earlier, is the depth. I didn't see anybody particularly stand out. I know Jalen Myrick had a pick, but, you know, that was kind of a fluke-busted play. But otherwise, you know, there are good athletes back there, but there's nothing to me that screams like, hey, we've got depth at this position.
Yeah, I want to ask you a question before I start to get into things. Did you notice Eric Murray was on the field at all on Saturday?
He was on the field.
Your hesitation is my point exactly.
Yeah.
Eric Murray was out there as much as anyone else, and you never noticed because
they never throw at him.
The ball.
Yeah.
And for as much credit as Boddy Calhoun gets, and again, Love the guy. Brian Boddy Calhoun, couldn't ask for a better guy on or off the field. He gets balls thrown his way because teams are so scared to throw at Eric Murray because he's already locked down on him. He's got the pair of clamps, and they're literally around the guy already.
Right.
Second and a half into it as he jammed the guy at the line of scrimmage. He's running hip for hip.
Mm-hmm.
No one throws the ball towards him. I had this conversation with, I think, two or three people Saturday on the field. They came up to me and was like, is Eric Murray playing today?
Yeah.
Yes, he's been out there for about 40 snaps. Oh, I haven't even noticed.
Yeah.
Because no one throws towards him, and it's going to be that same way for the fourth straight or the third straight year he's been starting here.
Right.
And that's why he's going to play in the NFL. And for NFL teams, that was the most NFL teams I've seen in a Gopher practice in 4 years. There
sure.
were a lot of – I saw the Packers, the Vikings, the Saints.
The Cowboys.
The Cowboys, the Jaguars.
Yep.
And there was two more I can't think of. The Seahawks were there again. Seahawks have been at like two or three different practices. But
sure.
This starting secondary is legit. Obviously, Boddy got burned on a slant by Melvin Holland. It happens. That's the first time Boddy's been burned all camp. Not worried about it. He's a fourth-team All-American for a reason. Eric Murray never gets the ball thrown his way, so fans can't really appreciate him as much, as he's not much of a playmaker because he gets one or two balls a game,
mm-hmm.
where Boddy Calhoun gets five or six. I thought Demaryius stepped up and played well. As I've been saying for months now, folks, Demaryius Travis is going to play in the NFL, and he will be drafted. And you're starting to see a little bit of that starting on Saturday as mm-hmm. he was all over the field making plays, coming down in the box, almost had a pick. And Antonio Johnson has been solid as well.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is, again, like you said, there is some depth concerns for me at corner. I thought Jalen Myrick had his best practice/scrimmage of 2015 on Saturday. He had the interception on a broken play, miscommunication there. He also broke on a ball in the flats, read the quarterback side. I believe you read the route combination. I believe it was like a bubble screen. He went right through the two defenders and almost had a pick. If he would have had it, he wouldn't have been caught.
Yep.
Made a couple nice tackles on the sidelines. I was very encouraged by Jalen. I was very mm-hmm. encouraged. So I'm okay with him. Craig James has yet to really have a day where it's like, I understand why you're the fourth cornerback, besides the fact that you're the only older guy, I will say, on scholarship, as he played as a true freshman last year and as a true sophomore.
Yeah.
He's one of the oldest guys in this cornerback group. They're very young.
Right.
He's had kind of a nondescript fall. Keontae Harden is a true freshman who has really solidified himself, I think, as a guy who's going to play as a true freshman. He was very solid in pass coverage. Obviously not fair, 5'10", going against 6'6", Rashad Still.
Yeah.
But those are matchups he's learning how to defend. It's
sure.
not every day a kid from Webb City, Missouri is going to go up against a 6'6" athletic freak and Rashad Still. So he's got to keep learning how to defend those taller receivers. As early as this fall, he could be going against them if a few injuries happen. And Antonio Chanot and Ray Buford, they're true freshmen coming along. I mean, it's their 10th day of football. Their legs are dead. I can't – this is another point I really want to reiterate to folks. For people who thought that the speed and the athleticism weren't as great as advertised, you also got to remember these kids are in fall camp. They're 10 days in, so you know the grind is really starting to hit these legs. They're in two-a-days. Mm-hmm. They're not at 100% of what they will be come TCU when the adrenaline's flowing. They're lighting up the loads. The day before, they just come off a big scrimmage for BTN. But depth is a concern, as you said. I'm not as concerned at safety with guys like Ace Rogers, Kunle Ayinde, Duke McGee.
Mm-hmm.
You have depth there. You have guys that are more than adequate to play, but at corner, it is an issue right now.
Okay. So kind of to close out, I'll let you start. What's one of the good impressions you're taking away from the scrimmage?
I will take away what we haven't talked about yet, which is that wide receiving core, especially the young guys.
Mm-hmm.
Melvin Holland, for fans that weren't there, Melvin was matched up across from Brian Boddy Calhoun. He put on a fancy footwork move / head juke / some funky things with him. He was doing some kind of a jazz hand thing. Perfect cut into the ground. He was explosive. Leitner put it right on the money. He caught it, turned upfield, went 56 yards. was eventually tackled by Antonio Johnson, who had a little bit of an angle. Melvin's not the fastest guy, but Melvin had a good day. Rashad Spill had a great day.
Mm-hmm.
He made a heck of a touchdown catch on a – it was a funny play. So Connor Rhoda is the quarterback. He gets the snap. Coach Kill, immediately once he gets the snap, says, throw it to Rashad. Throw it to Rashad. Obviously, knowing that Rashad is running a fade route on Keontae in the end zone, Rhoda puts up a perfect ball, puts it right on top of Keontae's head. Rashad goes up, 6'6", All-State basketball player comes out in him, makes a beautiful catch.
Mm-hmm.
He made a couple of those throughout the day. Just this entire young wide receiving corps, Jeff Jones didn't really do a whole lot. I was disappointed they didn't let Desmond go get one because Desmond Gant, they didn't do any play action type things I didn't see.
No.
But Desmond is going to be this deep threat. I wish they would have put him on display because that dude is I'm telling you, Luke, right now, if that dude puts it together, watch out.
Yeah, he's going to be good.
He is the freakiest athlete on this team. I will reiterate this point once again. He's 6'3.5", 215 pounds. He has a 42-inch vertical, and he's one of the top 10 fastest on the team.
Right.
If he puts it together, this dude is going to be making a lot of money. But he's yet to put it together, I should say. But
sure.
A good impression for me is this young wide receiving core because they all have to step out. Outside of KJ May, it's so much unproven. Drew Olatarski, who dressed and played, he had the same kind of day he's had all fall camp where he's starting, but nothing has ever thrown his way. I think I can count on one hand the amount of targets he's had in the 7 practices I saw, and that's not a good thing. As guys like Jeff Jones, Melvin Holland, Desmond Gant, they're getting targets. Why aren't you? I wouldn't be surprised if Eric Carter or Jeff Jones or Melvin Holland passes Mr. Olatarski, but I was encouraged by what I saw from the receivers, and I really hope they keep putting it together for these next 17 days, I believe, until the Gophers take on TCU, because if they do, Leitner will have some viable targets, which I couldn't say for a majority of last year that will be open. What did you take out of it?
So I think that when it comes to like a good impression, I'm kind of going to piggyback on talking about the wide receivers, but I'm going to take a little bit different angle. I was impressed with some of the depth we have at like playmaking positions. When you look at say running back, you know what you have in Roderick Williams. You know, he's not a burst breakaway guy, but then you look at like a Rodney Smith. Well, you've got depth and you've got a Berkeley Edwards that he's got a lot of punch. Like he could take it the distance. And I was really impressed with Shannon Brooks, as we've already discussed. But then those freshman wide receivers, they showed a lot to me. I was really impressed with the size. You know, Melvin Holland, that catch, and he basically of those 56 yards, he ran about 45 of them, right? It was a very nice running catch. When you also look at like tight end and even some of the other playmaking positions, like obviously you have your corners that are good, but even the punt return and kick return guys, you've got a lot of really skilled players. You know, a Jalen Myrick or a Keontae Harden looks the part with the speed, you know, that a lot of guys that could make big plays. And in the past, you know, when I was at the U, we were just praying that they'd kick it to Troy Stoudemire because he was about the only guy that seemingly could make a big play during a game, other than maybe a McKnight or an Eric Decker, you know, but usually you only had one. You didn't have multiple guys that could, you know, make big plays. And while I say this, they didn't target Jeff Jones hardly at all, right? And he's a guy that I expect to make some big plays. So I'm really excited, just a depth of playmaking that might be there. And hopefully this turns into more quick touchdowns for this offense.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, one more thing I also want to know before we put a tie on this podcast is, and how about special teams on Saturday, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
Ryan Santoso.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, he was 3 of 3, field goals of 40, 43, and 44. Leg is never an issue. It's been accuracy. He had been a little bit, you know, suspect with his accuracy in practice, but transitioned over to the scrimmage well, and he was easily making them from that distance.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, did you see the hang time he was getting on those punts?
Yeah, he was like you were saying earlier, he was phenomenal, and he even maybe put Martell to shame.
He did. I think there was probably a second of hang time between the two. Wartell didn't have a great day, but that's fine.
Yeah.
He's the first team all Big Ten punter. He is one of the last things I'm concerned for me.
Yep.
On this special teams group. You have Santoso. If he can be consistent with obviously his accuracy, the legs there. You have Emmett Carpenter, who I would like to admit that I've been hyping up since we did that special teams podcast back in the summer here.
Yeah.
Hey, I might know what I'm talking about a little bit. Yeah. That kid has got a leg.
Yeah,
these kickoffs, man.
Yeah, he definitely does. I will admit though, the one thing about punting is what Mortel does incredibly well is he's a great directional kicker. And, you know, he may not have that hang time. And like we said, he might not end up in the NFL, and that hang time might be the reason. But, wow, the hang time of Santoso, that was really incredible.
Punter watch 2016. Yeah. Are you ready to start it right here?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But special teams was encouraging. Ryan Santoso had a great day. 3 of 3, booming punts.
Yep.
We're good.
It looks like too, from punt return, we didn't see any kick return stuff, but it looks like KJ May and maybe Keontae Harden are the guys that might return punts. And obviously I didn't see Craig James back there, but I got to imagine he's going to be an option too.
Yeah. The three guys that saw returning punts on Saturday were Craig James, KJ May, and Keontae Harden. So obviously Keontae already getting reps with special teams groups. It's what his role is probably going to be for the most part, but
right.
Special teams, the long snapper battle is something we could probably get into for 10 minutes. I don't think anybody's really started to go away with it yet.
Yeah, okay.
Peyton Jordahl, walk-on from last year, he's probably the guy I'm counting on the most.
Mm-hmm.
He's been most consistent, but that job's still wide open, I would say. But overall, Saturday's impressions, encouraging, I would say.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Okay, so to wrap this up, Ryan, if people want to, you know, read some of the content you have, where can they find that?
Absolutely. So at each one of these 7 practices I've been to and that have been open to the media and or the public or both,
right?
I've gotten practice notes up. I've gotten a full photo gallery up. I've gotten videos up from each day. I don't think there's too many Gopher sites that can say they've got all 3 consistently, if at all. So if you want to check out any of what we've talked about so far, I encourage you to go to gopherdigest.com. Give us a shot. I mean, it's less than $10 a month. It's less than, I believe, $9 a year if you want to support, you know, this podcast and what we do here. It's something that I can guarantee you from the bottom of my heart, you're going to get the most bang for your buck for any Gopher site out there. I can guarantee you our recruiting coverage is, you know, second to none. And plus what we're going to have going here during the season between the podcast and the different preview and breakdown type articles, it's a very good time to join. And if you have any questions about that or have anything you'd like me to know, tweet me, obviously, at BurnsRyanMN or at BurnsRyanMN@gmail.com. I love feedback. I love constructive criticism. I mean, obviously, I think there's something that each one of us can point to that we can do a little bit better, and I'd love to hear what you have to say, good or bad. It's something that we're working on improving, especially with this podcast and the content over at Gopher Digest. So, you know, It's a great time to join, I would say.
All right, and if you've stuck around for at least these 50-plus minutes of us ranting about Gopher football, please head over to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast if you aren't already. Also, there's this option to review or rate. We'd appreciate you giving us a rating and review. That helps us publicize the podcast even a little bit more. So if you can write a nice review, that would be appreciated. If you want to write a bad review, that's also appreciated. But, you know, we would encourage the nice reviews. So thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon.
Yeah, thank you very much. Again, please review the podcast. I mean, if you have any questions or comments for us, we encourage feedback. Tweet us, email me, but however you want to reach out to me, Carrier Pigeon, whatever you think. We want your feedback. We thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.